There we go. With my music.
Blog Talk Radio.
I love that idea.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there.
Okay, everybody, this is MJ Network, and so what if it's cloudy outside? Just sit down and listen to my show, because this is going to be so fantastic. My favorite place to go when I was a kid, because I read like 10 books a week, was the library. But watch out when you go to this one, because Carrie's back, and you never know what's going to happen, because this time everything is buried in the stacks. And Allison Brooke, a.k.a. Marilyn Levinson, is here. Good morning. How you doing?
Hi, Fran. I'm happy to be back here.
I'm glad you're back here, too, because I've got a few more ideas besides this show. I'm going to email you about a panel show that I want to do in December that might
uh-huh.
be right up your alley, too. Uh-huh.
Well, I love your panel shows. Do you know I ran into Dick at Malice?
I love him.
Richard. I know. I looked at his name tag and I said, "I know you." And then we had a really nice chat. So I have met people because of your shows.
Oh, good. Dick Felsky is great, and he's going to be on with Jim Nesmith and Alan Topol and T.J. O'Connor on November 19th, and we're going to talk about how they use their real life work and their
experiences.
Real life issues,
yeah.
In their
right.
books. Yeah. But mm-hmm. I want to do one because I'm listening to the people on Twitter, some of them, need to not Twitter, and I'm listening to people in general speaking, and I'm going to bring up my Bertha book, my Bertha series, my kids series, and I would like to do something on the power of words.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
That's my panel show. I'd like to do something with the power of words in life and on television and how they affect the way people think and act. And
mm-hmm.
I thought that would be
good
an
topic.
Interesting topic. Yeah, you never know what I'm going to say. So, okay, we have Carrie and her roles in the library. How does she interact with her coworkers? And tell her she's the events planner. And Dorothy hates her because she wanted the job. So why else
That's
does Dorothy
right.
not like
That's
Carrie?
Right.
Yeah, I like Dorothy. Sorry. She's evil. You got to have evil. What's the point? I mean, seriously, she's really evil.
I know, but her aunt loves her. Her ghost aunt, Evelyn, loves her. She's her favorite. She kind of feels sorry for Dorothy. It's unexplainable why she's so fond of her, of all the three, you know, her two nieces and nephew, that she's, you know, she just sort of has gravitated to Dorothy. And Dorothy is not really a very nice person. And unfortunately, Carrie is thrown into the position of she's the new Sunshine delegate. And when Dorothy ends up in the hospital, Sally, who's their boss, asks Carrie to visit Dorothy in the hospital.
I don't know. She's so good, Carrie. I probably would have brought her a cake that would taste horrible. Maybe it was, I don't know. So bad.
Well, she brought her books and some stuff to eat, and she's shocked when Dorothy is frightened, and she thinks that her husband tried to kill her, made an attempt on her life, and that's why she ended up in the hospital.
Poor Dorothy, she should only know the truth. Okay. But the ending with her husband was, oh my God. She doesn't know. So how did she manage? She blackmailed so many people. And how did she?
Well, they don't find that out until. Well, she.
Yeah, I know.
They know. They know in other books that she that she uses. She blackmails people verbally, but it's only after she's dead that they find out that she's been literally blackmailing them for money. So there are many people who might want her dead. And so Carrie and goes, mm-hmm. and at Evelyn's request, of course, mm-hmm. goes about investigating and tries to figure out who of the people on the list might have killed Dorothy.
It would be really interesting if there's another list that nobody knows about, and they'll get her next time, to get them next time, too. Whoa. You know, Dorothy's a very powerful character. She's not going away so fast.
I know you'd like to bring her back.
I think
that's
we
so
should
funny.
Bring her back with some help. I'll tell you.
I think that's very interesting. I love that. That's very interesting. I know, you know, it's funny, when I was in a bookstore once after my first book, my first children's book was written, and a girl, somebody who worked in the bookstore said, you know, you really should have a book about a character who has to wear glasses. And as a result, I did
yeah.
write a children's book about a boy who has to wear glasses, and he won't, and all the problems that he gets into because he's
yeah.
not seeing well. From playing soccer, he didn't know he had a spelling test, and all the problems that befell him because he refused to wear glasses, you know, because he felt that one of his friends, who was a bully kind of personality, was going to make fun of him. So, yes,
but you, know
you,
what?
You
that,
do get
that's
ideas.
That's a good topic. That's a good topic. That is a good topic.
Yeah. Right, you're sensitive to it because now you're writing children's books, too.
Well, my children's books are based on me. It's real life business growing up with my sister. And when I write about what really happened, you wouldn't believe. Yeah, my mom believed that dancing lessons were required, and I hated it. My sister was gorgeous and thin, and I was short and fat and couldn't do it. So one of the stories is about my dancing lessons, and I went to some the teachers I had were famous, very famous. And one of their brothers was a famous jockey. So we went
mm-hmm.
there, and I hated every minute of it. But the lady that played the piano for us felt sorry for me. And Rose said, if you do the tap dancing, I'll let you play the piano, because I can play the piano, for some of the songs during the show. Because we danced in Carnegie Hall.
Oh.
And,
well, that's funny. I took ballet yeah. dance lessons at Carnegie, the small building, I could have run into you. I loved my dancing mm-hmm. lessons, but my mother, after a while, I really didn't want to take any more piano lessons, and I didn't want to go to Hebrew school, and I was going to all these schools and places, but I was going to be a ballet dancer or a writer, and you see which one went out. So, anyway, I became a writer after I became a Spanish teacher.
Well,
getting back to Carrie, are there any more questions
yeah.
about Carrie?
Plenty of questions about Carrie. Haha. So we have Dorothy. Why does her brother and sister hate her? Why? I mean, she's so wonderful. Seriously.
Who, Dorothy?
And,
well, yes, Dorothy.
Yeah.
Dorothy has a brother and sister. The brother is very good looking. Well, actually, so is the sister. The sister. Her name is
yeah.
Francine, and she puts on airs, and she calls herself Francesca.
I like her.
You must call her Francesca. And
uh-huh.
she's married to a wealthy man, and they are in. What happens is that Carrie ends up visiting Dorothy after she's in the hospital, and she comes across a family scene where. They are discussing, Fred is discussing with his brother-in-law, Dorothy's brother, about putting money into a plan, one of Ernie Pfeiffer's plans. And
mm-hmm.
as you know, Ernie Pfeiffer is not to be trusted, but
oh,
Ernie swears that this is an up-and-up legitimate plan, but of course Dorothy doesn't believe it. And not only that, her brother seems to be he's very smart, but he's always seems to be short of money. So he
mm-hmm.
wants Fred and Dorothy to give him some money so that he can take part in be part of this of the enterprise. And should we say what the enterprise is?
No, we got to be careful not to say. But why did Fred think it was okay? Her husband got fooled.
Yes, he did, because Ernie, he's a very good conniver, Ernie, who is their neighbor. And they should know better, because Ernie Pfeiffer is the person who defrauded Evelyn and her husband of a good part of their money years earlier. So they really should know that not to trust Ernie. But Ernie also gets involved with Francesca's husband, who's a lawyer. So they think it's all fine and legal. And perhaps we should talk about the library's problem with the homeless.
Yeah.
Well, many libraries have this problem that during the winter months, the homeless people in a town often have no place to go because where they sleep is they're not allowed to stay in the facility where they sleep. They're told to leave after a certain hour by I don't know what time. Mm-hmm. Each place is different, and then they come back in time for dinner. But they need to find a place to stay during the winter months because it's cold. You can't be outside. So the library is a very popular place. And as most people know, there is a large percentage of the homeless population that either they have some mental problems. Of course, not all of them, mm-hmm. but there are some. They can't earn money, and they have mental problems. They are on drugs. For whatever reason, they have trouble coping with life. So, of course, when they're put into a place, cozy as it may be, like a library, they can't just sit there quietly all day looking at magazines, and some of them act up. And it becomes a problem for the people who run the library. Because these people are entitled to be there, but by the same token, they have to behave so that the patrons who come there, to read or to look at magazines or to do research, they aren't to be disturbed. So Carrie witnesses this what's happening in the library. And it's interesting because different people who work there have different reactions. Mm-hmm. Some are more willing to help and find a solution, or others just are very annoyed, like the grumpy computer person, Harvey Kirk. You know, he doesn't. These people come over, and one looks at pornography or whatever, and often these people smell. It's a genuine problem that many libraries have. I've heard about this from many librarians I've witnessed it in various libraries where I've lived. So Dorothy is very happy. Carrie is very happy to join a group because they've bought a house near the Green, which is the center of Clover Ridge, where my series takes place, and they are setting up a place where the homeless can go during the day, and they'll give them some sort of treatment or help or places mm-hmm. where they could get jobs, and so she becomes involved, and she offers the library as a place where they can meet and talk about it. And make plans for Haven House.
You know, it's a real problem. Even in Manhattan, I know there's a very, very exclusive building, and mm-hmm. the people that live there have to pay extra money for guards because the people come out, they're right down the block, and they're dangerous. Not everyone is dangerous. When I go to the Thriller Fest at the Grand Hyatt in Manhattan, I think I didn't go this year because my husband was ill. But the year before, I mean, there were guys outside, around the corner, sleeping on the ground. And they didn't look like they were poor. They had better clothes and better sneakers than I did. But they were outside the hotel, and it's scary. It's scary. They're not going to bother you. They just have a sign, "Can you give me money?" And I looked at them, I go, "I think about time you can get up and get a job." It's pathetic. Some of them actually like being homeless, which is even scarier. So...
Yeah, I guess they don't like any, and other homeless just simply don't want to be confined to a residence because they say some of them are dangerous and, you know, you're dealing with people who, so many of them have severe problems. But there is a middle class. It's not just, you know, sometimes
everybody.
It happens to veterans because they, you know, they've suffered from combat and they just can't deal with things. And also, it could be ordinary middle class people, as there is a couple in my story, in my book.
Yep.
And they, you know, Carrie finds out that they used to live in town. They had a store and a house. Well, they lost. What happened was the husband was growing more and more senile, and he made bad business choices and decisions. And they lost their house, they lost their store, and they went to live with their son. But he got divorced, and they ended up in a shelter. And it's just scary that you know, this can happen to people. You know, some people will have, they had good jobs, and you know, this is, and they, so she turns to her uncle to see what could be done for the husband, because the husband really needs attention. And there are several incidents that happen in school. It's very interesting. Most reviewers appreciated the fact that that I touched and you know, dealt with the issue of homelessness, and of course there's no solution to it, you know, but just discussed it and talked about it and in depth. But yet I had a reviewer yesterday, she gave me 4 stars because she loved the book, but she didn't like the homeless element. It bothered her, I guess. It she just didn't like it. She found it a negative. And yet I feel that a cozy, yes, it's cozy, but I think other elements could be brought in. And since I did deal with it in a loving way, I just feel that this is something that I will continue to do, you know, deal with different issues. Because I deal with Carrie's relationships with her parents, her father, and then in a later book with her mother. And, I mean, these are real-life incidences, and I think they can be dealt in cozies. And cozies can't just be silly and nonsensical. I think they can be dealt with real-life issues.
I think I put that in my review, too. As a matter of fact, it's funny that you should say that, because Dick Belsky's book was about, Below the Fold, was about a homeless lady that was killed in a bank vestibule. And it was about homelessness. It's an important issue, and it's got to be addressed.
It is.
I mean,
it's
scary.
It's a part of our society.
Yeah.
And these, I mean, something has to be done. You can't just, you know, it's very difficult because, as you said, a lot of people don't, they want to be homeless. They don't want to be tied down. But getting back to the mystery, Carrie discovers that Haven House is first of all, the people in Dorothy's family are involved with Haven House, but Evelyn is she sees a lot of things that go on in the library. Of course, she can eavesdrop on any conversation that goes on there, but she does help Carrie solve murder mysteries, but she also is sometimes reluctant to share information she has, and she is reluctant when it impacts her family's reputation. Even though she's dead, she continues. She knows that her family, her niece and nephew, the live ones, are less than perfect. And in fact, they in turn have asked her for money, and that's part of the reason why she left all her money. And believe me, there wasn't a lot after Ernie Pfeiffer got finished with her, to Dorothy. So this is, you know, she is a helpful ghost, but she's not always helpful. And then you
I think Evelyn should get rid of her. I think Evelyn should have some revenge on Ernie, too, next time.
Well, I think, you know, people like that get away with things. Well, he does end up in jail.
Tell me about
but
it. I know.
Well, we won't. Yes, I know. But it's just very interesting that she, her niece and nephew, her two nieces and nephews have elements about them that are less than desirable. And, well, Francine is not too bad, but she's, you know, she's very much a snob. And also, I think she Evelyn feels sorry for Dorothy because Dorothy is not a homely woman, but she's far from attractive, especially with her grim expression. But her sister and brother are extraordinarily good-looking. So I would say that's a reason why Dorothy is especially sympathetic to her, you know, and she's very supportive of her. But everyone has his and her own story. You find out about Fred and his relationship, which I won't go into now. And
I thought that was so cool.
And also, everyone has his or her own story. So there is that. And she's learned. Oh, even Dorothy, even Evelyn, Carrie learns that Evelyn's done something that's a little bit less than nice, and she's a little discouraged by what she's learning about people and human nature. Things Sally's done, Evelyn's done, everyone has done something that's either spiteful or nasty, and it's her father who tells her to have more faith in people. Her father, I love Jim, her father.
I love her father too. I think he's really terrific. I'm glad you brought him back a couple of times.
Oh, wait till you see what happens in the fourth book. Well, Jim was he was a thief. That was his job.
Yeah, I know. That's what I love about him. He's so cool.
But now he has a good job. He is working where Dylan.
Dylan's
company.
Too.
Oh, we didn't talk about Dylan. Dylan.
Oh, that was my next question. Is to tell us about Jim and Dylan. And is Carrie going to ever make this official? Seriously, it's about time.
Well,
maybe.
Eventually. Carrie has many scars from her dysfunctional, her unfortunate upbringing. You learn about Carrie's background, her upgrowing, her developing years through the different books. Carrie's father, Jim, is a good-looking, charismatic man who unfortunately became a thief, and not always a successful thief because he did spend time in prison. And but he always loved his children. Carrie had an older brother who died, and Jordan was the mainstay of her life because Carrie's mother, who was really with the two children as a single mother, even when he wasn't in prison, often spent time away from the family. She was not at all maternal, and she and Carrie don't especially get along. And when Carrie leaves college, she just goes from place to place. She has no real home until she ends up in Clover Ridge, where she spent summers because her father's family's from there, and she goes and lives with her great aunt and uncle. But Jim comes back in the second book, and he wants Carrie to help him retrieve money from somebody pulled a heist with, the jeweler in town who's very respectable. And of course, when he's murdered, Carrie, she knows her father didn't kill anyone. He's not a murderer. He's just a thief. And so he comes back in her life in the second book. And also, Jim is now working in the company that Dylan is now a partner in. Dylan is an investigator, and his boss, the main office is in Atlanta, but in the third book, he is moving to Connecticut. He said he has his office in Connecticut. And it's interesting, a few people commented they felt that there wasn't much chemistry between Carrie and Dylan in the third book, which surprised me. But because, I mean, she has all these other things going on. And so, and also he's pulled away because Mac has him take care of a big job that brings him to Europe. Dylan has a background in, he researched actually paintings, expensive art and antiques and painting, and so he's an authority in this particular area, and jewels. In fact, he was on the trail of the missing jewels that her father had taken, but that is back in Red and Gone. And for those who want to read about that, that's the second book in the Haunted Library series. But now, in the third book, Jim is living in Atlanta, and he's leading the good life. He loves his job. He's become an authority on how to deal with thieves. Could you imagine? So anyway, he and Carrie, he's always loved Carrie, and Carrie's always loved her father, and she resented him and felt so betrayed when he was away most of the time. So for a long time, she couldn't trust that he was back in her life. But he's proven, even though now he lives far away from her, because she lives in Connecticut and he lives in Atlanta, that he loves her and he cares about her, and he's interested in her life. And he and Dylan are very, very good friends now. They are not only because they're in the same field, so to speak, but they just have an affinity for each other. So that is Dylan's relationship. Yeah, that is really nice, because you never know who's going to like whom. And also, as I write the series, there are more and more people in the series. And, you know, I bring many of the people into the series. And, oh, there is one character I did want to talk about. Jillian. Do you remember Jillian?
Yes.
You meet her in the first book, Death Overdue, and when Carrie is investigating the death of a woman who died 15 years earlier, and she becomes very friendly with her son, the son. There are two sons, and she becomes friendly with the son, and she wants to help him find the murderer, and also the detective is murdered, so, you know. But the other brother is not a very nice person, but she likes his girlfriend, Jillian, and they eventually break up, Jillian and the brother, and then Ryan Foster, and then in the third book, she finds that Jillian is involved in the project to form Haven House, and they go to this very large fun fair. It's a dinner dance, and Dylan cannot come because he's away in Europe chasing thieves. And so she goes with Jillian to this dance, and there is Evelyn's nephew, the good-looking Dorothy's brother. And, Carrie could see right away that he's really you know, first of all, he's married. What is he doing there without his wife? And she finds out that his wife has finally thrown him out of the house because he doesn't have a job, he doesn't work, he's just shiftless. And so, of course, he makes a play for Jillian, and Jillian, you know, eats it up, and she tries to tell Jillian that he's not to be trusted, but Jillian just doesn't seem to have any good sense when it comes to men. So we explore that also in the book, you know, anyway. But I try to, you know, deal with very many life issues in my books.
Well, Jillian seemed that she just wanted somebody to care about her in her life, and she wasn't very particular. And I tried to warn her, but she didn't listen. The truth of the matter is that my sister was funny before she died. And when I met my husband, she had this clipboard test, and she had questions, and she asked questions on the clipboard. It was hilarious. She said, if
she
they don't pass
your,
the clipboard
she asked
test,
you or your husband?
Go. She asked Jeff. She asked Jeff.
Did she like his answers?
He cracked up laughing. Yeah. She said, what do you do? Blah, blah, blah. It was hilarious. It was totally hilarious. So my niece was dating someone, and I said, he's the wrong person. I said, and I don't particularly like what I see. And I said to her, unless he passes my clipboard test, you're dumping him. He didn't pass. He dumped him. No, seriously.
She really did?
Yeah, she did. She
wow.
finally dumped him because I said to her, you know, Cor, this is the wrong person for you. She's 18. And I said, well, you're going to school, you're going to go into acting and music, and she sings and everything. She's all over the place. I said, and your aunt is going to tell you what to do, because if you listen to anybody else, you're going to get in trouble. And she listens to me. She said, you know what, you were right to start with. She said, I had to see it for myself, but you're right. I said, he didn't pass any
but
tests.
But most people, I'm very surprised, because most people take offense, and they don't see
yeah.
it. And Jillian is not happy when Carrie tries to tell her, you know, this person is not good for you. You know, he's look at
yeah.
his record. He's not only that, he's still married. You know, his wife threw him out, but he is still married. And she said, oh no, he's good to me. He's treating me well. And
yeah, until,
Carrie,
until she learns the hard way. Yeah, until yeah.
Yeah, but there's just so much you can do with many people, because very often people do not want advice and they do not want to be told. So, but anyway, it's, things come together with Haven House, and Carrie learns some very unpleasant things are going on, which kind of upset her. And she finds out that Evelyn died 7 years ago. Evelyn, remember, is the ghost who
yeah.
haunts the library. And everyone assumes that Evelyn's death was an accident. She slipped on the ice when she left the library. She was an aide in the library, and she was there, worked there for years. And when she slipped on the ice that one night, and unfortunately, she was unconscious from the fall, and she lay there all night, and she died. Well, I don't want to give too much away, but
no, don't.
There could be a connection between Evelyn's so-called accident and Dorothy's murder, which you'll have to read the book to find out, but there's, and many things are tied up in this book, and including other people, the relatives, Dorothy's siblings, et cetera. And anyway, it was, you know, it was a fun book to write. It was a lot of elements that I like to draw everything together. And, you know, as I said, each book seems to have more and more characters, because you don't like to leave out, you know, the other characters, and you can never forget that the two main people in the stories, even though they don't always have a large part, are Evelyn's great aunt and uncle, her great uncle Bosco, who's her father's uncle.
Yeah, I like him. I know. I
and
like to have
Harriet,
an uncle like that too. I
yeah,
love him too.
Because they've never had children, and they were living initially in the Singleton farm. That's the farm where Carrie and Jordan used to go this summer, and that's where she met Dylan. Dylan used to play ball with her brother. That's as he reminded her that he knew her when she was 4 years old. And so after a while, they sold the farm and they bought one of the big houses that faced the green. And I love having my characters come back each time. Like, there's the lawyer who Carrie befriends. She meets him in the first book because he's a family friend of the Foster family. It's just so much fun to bring back characters. And then there's Carrie's little cousin, Tacy, who...
Oh, I love her. She's so cool.
Yeah, she's the only other person who can see Evelyn, and she keeps trying to give Evelyn cookies because she feels that Evelyn doesn't eat. But it finally comes through to in her head that Evelyn can't eat, and I guess for a long time she couldn't understand why Evelyn couldn't eat because she just saw Evelyn as a person. And her mother is a little worried. She doesn't know that Tacy's actually communicating with an entity, a ghost. She thinks that her little daughter has an imaginary friend, someone that she's... Mm-hmm. She's a little worried that she's needs an... Why does she need an imaginary friend, you know, when there are other children around? And then, of course, there's Smokey Joe.
I was just going to ask you that. Smoke, how did you invent this cat? I love this cat. He's so cool.
Well, it was
so
funny.
He's sort of like a real person.
I was going to bring one in, and my agent, in the second book, my agent said, why don't you have one, you know, a cat, so of course I brought him in the first book, and I think that was even better. I think Faith had a good idea there. Smokey Joe is a gray cat. I had a gray cat. Oh, Harold, I loved him. He lived a while ago. I lived in Jericho. Mm-hmm. He was my cat. But this cat is full. He comes into the story. He's half grown, and he has a very, very thick tail. And what happens is Carrie lives about 10 minutes from the library. She does not live in town. She lives in a cottage that's owned by Dylan. Dylan's family was quite wealthy. His parents are both dead. And she becomes friendly with Dylan. She gets to know Dylan again because she rents his cottage on his property. His house is like a manor house. And then like about a quarter of a mile down the property is the cottage. And it's there's a river passing it. It's a beautiful little cottage. It's already furnished. And Carrie, he gave... But Carrie rent this initially back in the first book for a very, very minimal amount of money. Well, the cottage in many areas, it's half surrounded by woods, and on the other side of the woods is a farm, and that's where Smokey Joe is one of the kittens that wandered over. He walked through the woods just as Carrie was getting ready to go to work that morning. So she opens the car and she wants to give him food, but he jumps into the car, and which is very surprising because he's a barn cat, so he's half feral. I mean, he's used to being around the farmer and his family, but she finds she has to go to work. So she ends up taking him to the library, and then she has trouble. She can't leave him. She can't leave him in the car, and he just about runs out, and she catches him, and she brings him into the library. What else can she do? And she runs apart. She meets Sally and Marion, the children's librarian, where Smokey Joe runs right into the children's section, and. To her amazement and everyone's amazement, he goes over to the children, and the children are really excited. And Carrie and Sally says, "What is this?" And Marion thinks it's adorable. And Carrie said, "Well, this is the library cat." And that's what he turned out to be. She brings him every day to the library, and he's very, very good with people. He seems to know which people want him to pet, which patrons want or welcome him, and which want to be left alone. And the children are always crazy about him. And in the second book, he plays an important part in the plot of the story, which I won't go into. But Smokey Joe is a very popular character in my book. He's more than just a little cat. He's, you know, he is an entity in his own. So we have the ghost, we have Smokey Joe, we have Carrie, and all the other characters, you know, who add to the stories.
Well, before I forget, the Wednesday, Reese Hirsch will be here with The Black Nowhere. He's really good. On the 24th, The Ornery Gene, it's about cattle breeding, actually. On the 26th, Catherine Riggs, What She Never Said, it's scary. On the 3rd, I'm actually going to interview a doctor, Dr. Robert Testito, What the F is Wrong with Our Healthcare, and the F, people, stands for food. And I asked him to be on the show because he's created a way of dealing with cholesterol, high blood pressure, diabetes through diet. And that's something that sounded really interesting. And the book, I don't like self-help, but this was pretty good. On the 10th, I have Rachel and Michael, Trinity House Entertainment, and we're going to talk about their new latest hit, United We Stand, which is a great song for people. And on the 15th, this is going to be so outrageous, John Land and Joe Pistone will be here to talk about Capital White. And if you know who Joe Pistone is, you're going to be like, oh, my God, I can't tell you. On the 16th, we have What She Never Said. And on the 21st, one of my favorite people, Shannon Kirk, Gretchen. And that's really scary. And that's just part of October. So it should be interesting.
Wow.
It should be. And I'm excited. I have to email her. Tess Gerrinson's coming on in November, thank goodness. And Matt Coyle's coming on in December. And a whole bunch of people that keep saying, are you going to interview me? And go like, I just got an email from J.A. Jance's publicist asking if I would like to review her new book. I sure would. And I said, if you just wanted to do an interview again, that would be really cool. But I'm going to get the book. That's all that really matters. What can I say? So,
when was the panel you were talking about before?
Okay. The one I'm thinking about for you, I haven't picked a date, in December, because November just got booked. Everything is booked, just like crazy. I'm thinking of when I have you on the phone, and I have my calendar in front of me, which is my phone. I don't have a book, people. I have a phone and my little thing here, which I had a nervous. My everything disappeared the other day. Thank God my husband found it. I'm thinking around the 10th or 11th of December, and one of those two dates, because that'll be my last show until January, because I got to take time off. I got to, you know,
of course
do something
you
else.
Do. Of course.
Yeah, nobody lets me, though. They don't. What can I tell you? Oh, my goodness.
What is the topic you're thinking of? What was the subject?
One of the topics I'm thinking about is talking about public libraries, first of all, which is right up your alley. Talking about how public libraries can help children want to read and help a local authors, because my local library won't help do anything. Unless I have a Kirkus review, then I won't pay them $400 or whatever for one, or a library thumb. They don't. I have New York Times authors that have endorsed Silent Voices that said it was fantastic. I got on a blog tour with Cheryl from Partners in Crime, and I got another fantastic review today. Of course, on my birthday last Monday, I got one that was so-so. Oh, well, she sort of ruined my day, but what can I tell you? So I'm thinking about libraries, why kids, how to get more people to go to libraries, the power of words, talking about how the power of words works in your books and in life. And there's another thing that I've been noticing on the internet, the opiate crisis and addiction. Doctors, and I asked my pharmacist, he said anybody could get a whole bunch of opiates. you can't get it refilled. But I'm thinking about one of those topics. But I think because it's coming closer to the holidays, I'm thinking about public libraries and how to get more kids to read.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more like
well, that's,
your top. Your,
yeah,
like
that's
for you.
Right. Well, libraries, I mean, my sleuth. I mean, I have a friend who does the work that my library that my sleuth does, and my library does so much more than just. Most of them do, than just you know have books. We have so many events, and we have so many food events. And I mean, I just was at a concert there yesterday. And Wednesday, I was at one of these food programs that I've talked about. And in fact, I've got one of the criticisms, no library does what your library does, you know, in my book. But it's not true. Most of the ideas that I get from my own library. And it's not just shelving books and offering books to people. People have all kinds of activities, all kinds of events at libraries. So that has to be explored also, you know. And also the word is, it's not just the written word. It's the auditory, it's the audio.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's there's so many ways of approaching, you know, what we want people to do and have, et cetera. So, for example, I mean, I thought this was silly at first, but every summer we have an adult reading program, and you have to read 5 books. And we have an ice cream party at the end. Oh, my God. You should see the trays of different kinds and flavors of ice cream that, you know, we have. And then they have for us. And then all the toppings, it's like – and also what my library does, if you read 5 books, any 5 books, you know, and you write about them – We get the last prize is a book. Everyone gets a book by one particular author, and then that author is brought in and speaks. So it's always interesting to hear about, you know, for me especially, to hear different authors talk about the way they write, you know, what they how they choose a subject, et cetera. And it's just very – it's wonderful. I mean, I use my library a lot, and so do a lot of my friends. So I think that's a very good topic.
They don't do that in mine. They don't do that here. I went up to the librarian with my mother's book, because my mother's book is fantastic. It's called The Daughter's Promise, and it's about her journey with Alzheimer's, but it's a resource. And I gave it to her. And I said, would you put this on your shelf? I didn't even ask them to buy any. Well, you don't have a library, you know, journal review. I said, but I have 10 New York Times authors that read it and thought it was fantastic, and some of them are on the front cover, and they wouldn't do it. I said, you won't help a local author. My husband's in the library all the time, and I'm constantly, they have a dollar section where you could buy books of any kind.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I constantly buy them for my nieces and nephews, and I said to her, you know what, I'm here all the time. I'm a patron of the library, and you're not going to help me. So I went and I spoke to another one, and I said, I can't believe. So they had, I don't know if they're having a book sale now or whatever. The last time I had a book sale, I gave them some books, and I said, you can sell them for a quarter. I don't care. Maybe people will read them. I don't know. They will not. They wouldn't help me. And
I'll tell you.
I can't believe this. They wouldn't anything. They wouldn't take Silent Voices either.
I understand. I'm surprised because they really, a lot of libraries have a section of authors who live nearby, you know, and very often
they have
things. But I know they're not always that eager. The head of the adult sources in my library, she told me that having an author, you know, speak does not usually bring that many people to the event. And when I had, they had, she had me come and speak when my first book in the series came out, and she had me do it just before the mystery group book club met, so there were many people there. I was surprised there were quite a bit of people. But now I spoke at the Friends meeting. I'm a friend of the library as well. And I spoke last year, and the president asked me to speak again. She said, you know, people asked her to have me back. So I don't get paid for that. So my feeling is I go wherever I'm asked to speak. I don't go looking for it, but I know it. I understand what you're saying because I've had the same experience with libraries. They're not that ready or willing to take books by patrons when they. I think they should. I think they should have a section. Some libraries do, you know, where patrons who are writers can offer their books and. You know, I mean, here you are offering your book, and I don't understand why they have all these silly rules, but it's not only your library, so it's too bad, you know.
Yes,
it really is too
also,
bad.
The manager of Barnes & Noble near me gave me, like, three book signings. Now that they have somebody else, I went up to them. My mother's book was published by a traditional publisher, regular publisher.
So it really was.
So I said to them, said to her, the librarian there, I said, can I get this in a book signing? The only problem was that it's a small press, so they didn't have returnability. So I said, why don't you buy 20 copies of the book, and whatever I don't sell, I'll buy them from you, so you're not stuck. And they wouldn't do it. I was insulted. I was incensed. I said, I come here all the time. I'm a local author. I've had book signings in here. My very first book was My Name is Bertha, and I sold over 75 books that day. And that's
that's impressive. That's very impressive.
It was impressive. And my family came. Everybody came, and people, the kids came, and everybody wanted to read it. And I did another one for another book, and I sold a lot of books. And they just, nothing. They get no help whatsoever. My niece did the cover and everything, so she came in from Florida to do it with me. And my mother-in-law, who died right after, was so proud of me. She said, oh, my God, I'm so proud of you. This is amazing. Because my mother had Alzheimer's. She couldn't do anything. And it's really sad. So
Who published your mother's book?
Edit Prose, and they're going out next year. They're not going to be there next year. But my new book is Silent Voices. It came out June 9th. It's told from the point of view of the person behind the gravestone that's dead. Three of the stories are real. They really did happen. The first two about my grandmother's and the one about the child in school, I told it the way it happened to me in sixth grade, exactly the way it happened. My sixth grade teacher is the main character, and she was a horrible person, so I put it behind the stone. The other four are my other four are my imagination. And the criticism I got the other day from somebody that was really nasty, and I don't know who she was. She wasn't anyone I knew. She said, I like the characters, but I really wish that you would have made them crazier and over the edge and psychopathic. And I didn't answer her. So on Facebook I put, if I did exactly what people said, and I understand where you're coming from, the problem is that I wouldn't have been true to what my grandmother dictated to me when she was younger. She was in a Polish sterilization camp. And she told me the story when I was older. And then my other grandmother was told to me by my cousin, so I had no idea that she was sold to slavery by her family to work for her aunt.
Really?
So I wrote this, and I didn't know. I wrote it the way they told it to me. And I wouldn't change it because that would be wrong. But
that is a whole other subject, reviews and comments. So, you know, it's your story, and it's not. Well, it's just like I told you, every other review appreciated that's the fact that I brought in the subject and the plight of the homeless.
Oh, I think that was definitely. Yeah, it was.
And then, but this other person, but you know something, Fran, she's entitled to her review. She's entitled to her opinion. If she felt that she didn't want to read about homeless, you know, or she didn't like reading about homeless.
There's got to be a reason.
I also felt that way when people felt that Carrie was, that Dylan was not. Did you feel that way, that Dylan and Carrie was sort of drifting? Or I didn't feel that way when I was writing it.
They did.
And
they did.
I think people.
Yeah, they did. She,
Well,
as a matter of fact, Carrie sort of said it too. Carrie sort of said it also, that she felt that he wasn't as close, he didn't come home enough. She was disappointed, and then, of course, that's not going to happen because they belong to him.
Well, yes, but he was, but he really was working hard. It was,
yeah.
And this happens in a relationship, and he didn't, yes, he was planning to set the places, you know, have his place of business in Clover Ridge,
yeah.
But then he got the offer from Mac. That they could, you know, he would be a partner, and they felt that New Haven was a better setting, which was about a half hour away. So she was hurt, and yes, things happen, but, you know, this was just a bump in their relationship. It really wasn't anything permanent or anything, you know. But everyone interprets different actions in a book according,
mm-hmm,
as you
yeah.
say, according to what they what's happened in their own personal life. And I think also what we have to realize, everyone's not going to love our books. Just
yeah,
like
that's right.
we don't love every book that's in the library. And there is people have, I mean, I have people who can't wait to read my next book. They love my characters. They love my setting. And, of course, there are people who don't read cozies, who don't read mysteries, who don't want to have a ghost in their book. And that's,
mm-hmm.
They're entitled to that. And that's why there are so many genres and subgenres and fiction and nonfiction and short stories and long novels. You know, there's something for everyone. And, you know, you gravitate to what you like. So, but I have to think that, you know, reviews have to be taken with a grain of salt. And, you know, you can't let it get you down, is what I think.
No, it didn't get me down. It was my birthday, and I didn't like it. But she gave me, what cracked me up was that she gave me, one of the reviewers gave me 4 stars on Amazon and 3 on Goodreads, and I questioned that of the person who does the blog to us. I said, I can't believe she did that, but every single time I do a blog, I do a tour, this particular person does the same thing. So I said, obviously, she doesn't love my brilliance. But anyway, before we go, where can everybody find out more about you and your work? And I'll let you know about the panel show as soon as I firm up my brain here, what
yes.
I want to do.
Well, they can go to my my website, which is www.marilynlevinson.com, and as well as my Amazon page, Marilyn Levinson. You'll find my Alice and Brooke books there as well. The Haunted Library is written under
mm-hmm.
Alice and Brooke. And, you know, everything is there. I'm on Facebook as well, again, under Marilyn Levinson. And Pinterest, although most of Pinterest is my collections of cat and dog pictures. I've become quite a collector. Every day somebody copies my cats, dogs, puppies, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I
yeah.
know you're supposed to be using Pinterest to promote your books, but I seem to love, you know, the animals. And actually, I have one of my Pinterest collections is I really should be advertising or telling people more about it. It's for authors' pets. And because so many of them die, and my poor Sammy is not very well, my cat, so I'm very upset about that. And anyway, I'm on Pinterest, I'm on Twitter, on Facebook mostly, I'd say. So I'd love to hear from readers, and I love Facebook because it really enables me to write and hear from readers. And I'm on a lot of Facebook groups, which is wonderful for people who like cozies. So that's where I am.
Well, that is good. I want to thank you so much. And I have an appointment now, and the person who I have the appointment with, well, she's getting your book. She wants it.
Oh.
I can't
so
go
nice.
Anywhere in my building without somebody saying to me, what do you have for me to read? It's amazing.
Oh.
The porter in my building, I gave him 20 books yesterday that I finished in the last 2 weeks, like whatever.
How you can read books so quickly. You're amazing.
It's my mother when I was 7, she said, you will read 5 books a week and then do your homework and whatever. I go like, Ma, how am I supposed to? I did it. I still do it. I could hear her in my head. What did you read? I read one this morning. Even though I didn't, you know, wasn't up to myself, I read a book and I emailed the publicist. I said, did you actually read this? She said, why? I said, because you don't want to. What can I say?
Anyway, really?
It's not.
Wow.
It was a book that had a lot of inconsistencies. The topic was interesting. And where the author could go with it would be really more interesting. But the writing was written on a third or fourth grade level.
So what did you do? What are you writing?
I didn't write the review
about it.
Yeah, I just won't post it on Amazon because it's a 3.5 star book,
That's really difficult. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very difficult.
I'm not going to write them. Yeah, I'm going to write something because the concept is good, but whatever. But anyway, thank you so very much. I will let you know about it. If December 10th or 11th, it'll be one of those days. I'll give you the details and instructions. And I would hope you will join us because that'll be fun.
I'd love to. I love being on your show. And thank you so much for having me today and giving me a chance to talk about Buried in the Stacks. And I hope people will go out and read it. It's in audio. It's in hardcover. It's in ebook format. So it's in many different formats.
Everybody have a great day. The sun is shining. Ha ha. You see that? And bye.
Okay. Bye.